Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, evidence of climate change in 2-mile-long ice cores, bacteria that stimulates the brain, and making cement like corals do. Here's a scientist soundbite.
I realized right away that I could form a cement that didn't produce carbon dioxide. In fact, would use carbon dioxide as a raw material, just like corals do.
That's Stanford chemical engineer Brent Constance speaking to us from a beach near Monterey Bay, California. More with him later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
A nor'easter, a large-scale snowstorm, developed on October 29th and dumped impressive amounts of snow across New England in the northeastern U.S. Experts say this amount of snowfall would rarely even be seen in the months of January or February. Snow totals ranged from 3 to 6 inches up to nearly 30-plus inches in some places within a 24-hour period. The early snowfall left over 3 million people temporarily without power.
On October 28th, NASA released a video indicating that researchers had found, for the first time ever, a star with spiral arms. Galaxies are known to have spiral arms, but this is the first star known to have them. The star is named SAO 206462, and the spiraling disk around it is thought to be twice as wide as the orbit of Pluto. Astronomers think the star's spiral arms might have been formed with the help of two nearby orbiting planets.
A study published in the journal Mammalian Biology on October 13th revealed that female Antarctic fur seals have an incredible ability to return to within a body length of where they were born when it's time to breed. Dr. Joe Hoffman from the University of Bielefeld in Germany discovered this after he tracked dozens of female seals from birth to maturity in the South Atlantic. Exactly how the seals managed to find their birthplaces remains mysterious, said Dr. Hoffman.
A piece of jawbone excavated from a prehistoric cave in England has become the earliest evidence of modern humans in northwestern Europe. And it could help scientists pin down how quickly modern humans spread across Europe during the last ice age. That's according to a study in the November issue of the journal Nature. These scientists say the bone, from Kent's Cavern in southwestern England, is between 44,000 and 41,000 years old.
China made a historic first in its budding space program on November 2nd with the docking in orbit of the Shenzhou 8 and the Tiangong 1 space modules. China says these are the first pieces of a permanent space station to be called Heavenly Palace, modeled after the Soviet Mir space station. The station is expected to be complete by 2020. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard.
We've got science interviews coming up next, but first, here's Black Books with The Big Idea. Congrats to them and the Black and White Ears on their early acceptance into the South by Southwest Music Festival.
You guys rock.
Thank you.
We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Chemical engineer Brent Constance of Stanford University is one of many scientists who take the approach of biomimicry, learning how nature does things and applying that knowledge to human problems. Constance founded a company called Calera that developed a new way to make cement for buildings. It takes heat-trapping carbon dioxide, or CO2, from power plant pollution and combines it with seawater to make cement. Constance said corals build their reefs in much the same way. Earth Sky interviewed Brent Constance at a beach near his demonstration plant in Los Gatos, California. We asked Constance what inspired him to take a fresh look at cement.
I was inspired by learning that the production of Portland cement, which is the main cementing component of concrete, produces about a ton of carbon dioxide for every ton of cement produced. And at that time in my life, I already had about 55 or 60 patents on cement, but not regular cement, it was for medical. But I realized right away that I could form a cement that didn't produce carbon dioxide. In fact, would use carbon dioxide as a raw material, just like corals do in making the cement. And I founded Calera. And Calera really blossomed because the first thing we realized is we needed a really good source of carbon dioxide. And in the atmosphere today, there's about 380 parts per million carbon dioxide. It may be increasing to as much as 500 in our lifetime. But if you really want to find carbon dioxide, you can go to a place where we're burning carbon-based fuels. Like, it could be biofuels, could be coal, could be natural gas, even wood. You have much more carbon dioxide being evolved. So by having such a rich source of carbon dioxide, it was an optimal coupling to put a cement formation process, which was mimicking what the calcification mechanism of animals like corals do, with this very rich carbon dioxide source, when the desire was to mitigate the emissions from coal plants anyway. And in a way, you could think of it having two advantages. One was to mitigate the CO2 coming from coal plants, and in parallel, offset the carbon that would have been produced by the production of Portland cement, which is the main cementing component of concrete. And what's important about this is there's a lot of ways we could potentially remove carbon dioxide from coal plants and other source point emissions of carbon dioxide, but none provides a reservoir as large as the built environment. Concrete, which is a mixture of cement and aggregate, like sand and gravel, for example, mixed together, is the largest shipped material other than water in the world. There's 12.5 billion tons of concrete sold every year. In addition to that, the aggregate, which goes in concrete, is also used in asphalt, which we pave our roads with, in road base for other places. And there are over 30 billion tons of aggregate mined every year. And to have the ability to both make cement and make an aggregate locally without having to mine it and transport it is one of the only reservoirs where we can sustainably, annually, on a repeated basis every year, remove billions of tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and put it in a product that's going to be used anyway. You know, it's interesting, we usually think of coal mining as the most serious form of mining. In fact, there's only about 5.5 billion tons of coal mined every year, but there's over 30 billion tons of rock mined. And so by being able to produce something as non-exotic as just limestone, which is what corals produce, from the exhaust coming from a coal plant, and produce a product that is needed year in and year out is a huge win for the planet. And it's also one of the only reservoirs where we could put that much CO2.
You've been listening to Brent Constance of the clean energy startup Calera. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We'll Earth Sky heard on 1500 radio stations around the world. Ryan Britton is here to tell us a weird science story about how a common type bacteria might make you smarter and even happier. Ryan, what's up?
Yeah, it's bacteria that's actually found in dirt that might have this effect on you. We really don't know yet, but microbiologists at the Sage Colleges of New York found that feeding mice bacteria that's often found in soil, can actually make the mice smarter. So they put mice through a maze, and the mice that were fed bacteria completed the maze twice as fast as the control group, which received, they were fed no bacteria. So researchers were actually surprised by the marked improvement. It was, as they described, a complicated maze.
So, Ryan, were the mice happy to be solving this maze?
Yeah, they displayed less anxiety in the maze. So I'm assuming that mazes are stressful to mice. And so apparently they were cooler about figuring the way out. The interesting thing is that the reason behind all of this is that the bacteria that the mice ate, they found stimulates the growth of certain neurons in the brain that produce serotonin. And serotonin is known as the happiness hormone and is also associated with the ability to learn. So researchers think that this is the source of the increased intelligence and lack of anxiety.
So you're not saying that we should all go out and eat dirt, are you?
No, I wouldn't do that quite yet. As I mentioned earlier, there's no evidence that this works on humans. Also, we're pretty well exposed to this type of bacteria on a daily basis just by walking around outside. But the one thing that researchers point out is that there could be eventually a case made for recess, and that's spending time outside on a playground during a school day. Here in the U.S., recess time for kids has been shrinking in favor of more classroom time. But here you have children with developing brains being exposed to bacteria outside, and so this could be a good thing for their intelligence, their ability to learn, and their well-being. So. I've always enjoyed recess, so it's a good enough argument for me.
Yeah, we should all have more recess.
Right, and we can justify that with this story. You can find it on abcnews.com, sciencedaily.com, discovery.com, among others.
Thanks, Ryan.
You're welcome.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. That song's called Truths in the Ceiling by the band Monarchs. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
What we're a little worried about is that we do know from history, from our ice cores, and from other records, that occasionally the climate is not well behaved.
You're listening to Richard Alley, a geologist at Penn State and winner of a 2011 Heinz Award. For the past several decades, Alley has been studying ice cores, samples from the accumulation of snow and ice laid down over thousands of years in Greenland and Antarctica. Alley did groundbreaking work in science when he helped extract a 2-mile-long ice core from Greenland in the early 1990s, which shows that Earth's climate changed abruptly in the past. With more of the greenhouse gas CO2 added each year to Earth's atmosphere, Dr. Alley is worried that abrupt climate change could happen again. Alley spoke with Earth Sky's Beth Lebwohl.
Dr. Alley, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure.
So you helped enhance scientists' understanding of climate change by suggesting that it could happen quickly rather than slowly. Tell us more.
Yeah, our community has been looking at how fast climate could change. And a lot of what we do is to look at the history of climate. If it happened, it might happen again. And so I was part of big projects that have gone to Greenland and Antarctica to look at ice cores. Snow on the big ice sheets piles up summer, winter, summer, winter, summer, winter. And in the snow are indications of how much fell, how dirty the air was, what cosmic rays were coming down, and how much space dust and other things like that, and indications of temperature. When we look at those histories, what we find is that usually the climate has been well behaved. If you give it a little more sun or a little more CO2, it gets a little warmer. Occasionally, though, you give it a little more something and something really weird happens. The climate will jump to a new state in as little as a few years.
Some of your landmark scientific work about abrupt climate change was based on data you acquired from a 2-mile-long ice core pulled from Greenland in the 1990s. So tell us about that.
We can actually count down through the years of history, and we start at the present and start going back. In that snow, there are indications of how much it was accumulating at a time, what the temperature was in Greenland, how much dust was blowing through the air, and a number of other things. And so a whole bunch of us counted back through history, and we got more than 10,000 years back without seeing very large or very fast changes. And then we hit sort of a cliff. And in a very few years, maybe 10, maybe fewer, we see change in everything that was measured in the core, and very large changes. Temperature changes in Greenland were 15 degrees Fahrenheit or more. Snowfall changed by a factor of 2. Dust in the air changed, and a number of other things changed as well. It was about 11,500 years ago that this really big change happened, and then there were many more similar ones older than that. It was linked to changes in the way that the ocean circulated and changes in sea ice, whether the ocean froze in the winter around Greenland or not. It's something that we're watching carefully for the future. We don't think it's going to happen in the future, but we're not positive.
I think the one thing that's unclear to me is best-case scenario versus worst-case scenario with regard to climate. What would climate look like if it got real bad because of the way, because of what we're doing to Earth? And what would it look like if it just sort of behaved itself?
Right. So worst-case scenarios would be things such as changing ocean circulation in a way that made it dry in the monsoon belts in places where a couple of billion people are expecting on the rain to water their crops. We know these abrupt changes in the North Atlantic were accompanied by drought in monsoonal regions. And so if we were to trigger something in the North Atlantic, it might in turn trigger changes in the monsoon. We're fairly confident that the Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets will stay where they are and melt fairly slowly. But if we were to dump an ice sheet in the ocean rapidly, you could have very rapid sea level rise. We don't expect any of those, but they are the sort of drunk drivers in the climate system that we can't totally exclude the possibility that they would happen.
Given that we need to have some insurance against the possibility of a very abrupt and severe climate change, what does that insurance look like?
Less emissions of carbon dioxide, basically. So try not to change the climate as rapidly would be one way to buy insurance.
That was geologist Richard Alley of Penn State University. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Our audio engineer is Eddie Campos. And special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Black Books, Monarchs, Maneja Beto, 100 Flowers, and The Black and White Years. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage. But what we don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night.